Victor and Lois are siblings who were both diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. Lois lives and works in London, and Hector is a student living in Vienna. In their weekly podcast, Anxiety Calling, they'll be talking about different aspects of living with generalized anxiety disorder and how they get by in day-to-day life.
Welcome to episode 23 of Anxiety Calling, part one. My name is Lois.
And I'm Hector, and today we're going to be talking about COVID-19 and all the wonderful anxiety-related issues connected to it.
Yeah, it's funny because we started this podcast during the pandemic, and I remember saying, oh, we should totally do an episode about the coronavirus. And for a long time, we put it off because you said...
Just felt too early.
Yeah, you said, nobody wants to hear about that. It's all they hear about on the news anyway. So, let's wait for a bit. But now it's been over a year, so I think it's probably time to get into it.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know where to start.
I think we should start at the beginning.
Because
I think that was actually something quite interesting was when everything kicked off, as it were.
In March
2020. Although before that, it was already kicking off elsewhere.
It was kicking off, yeah.
And we were, seeing it, and we did talk about it a few times before it kicked off.
Actually, in March, they already started the lockdown in... In February, they already started the lockdown in Vienna.
Yeah, that's the thing. The UK really took their sweet time to do their first lockdown, which wasn't until March. So, on my birthday, 2020 was when lockdown started.
Wow, that's so much later than Austria.
It was, yeah.
It was a month before in Austria. They already shut everything down. I remember at university and they said, you can't come tomorrow.
Yeah, that. And also you were wearing masks and stuff a lot earlier than here. Here for ages, yeah. Things were weird, but we weren't wearing masks, and there was no mandatory mask wearing. But also, even if you wanted to wear a mask, a lot of people were wearing masks, because they wanted to. But I couldn't get any. I was trying to get them, but there was nothing online. And I remember, there was things okay, yeah.
I remember you sewed your own one.
I tried to make my own one, and it was so awful. It was way too big for my face. Oh, it was a funny one.
What it really looked like was sort of post-apocalyptic. What is the word? Dystopian, a dystopian future vision of a.
It was like a Wes Anderson. If a Wes Anderson character tried to make their own mask, because it was all patchy as well. Because I took it was from bedding, so, and it had a weird had a strange pattern on it, and it was just it looked really, and I took bra straps from a bra to make the little strappy things for the ears, and I tried to make one for me and my boyfriend. Actually, the thing is, it did actually fit. It was so big that it did actually fit my boyfriend, but it didn't fit me at all. It was just way too big for my face. It looked like I looked like a child, basically. And the thing is, it said, if I tried to order them online, it was it would be there in I can't remember how many weeks, 3 weeks or something. No, 3 months or something. It was a long way. And I kind of naively was by then it'll all be over.
There was that thought, yeah.
And then in the end, you sent me my first mask, I remember, from Austria, because you could get them in a shop and I couldn't get them anywhere. So you sent us some masks.
Yeah, they started making them everywhere here.
Yeah, so you sent me some cloth masks, and then I was able to get some online. So now I've got plenty now, but at the time I couldn't get any, and I wanted to wear them because it wasn't so much that I was worried too much about myself. It was more that I wanted to make other people feel comfortable, especially elderly people. I didn't want them to feel endangered by me if I was in the shop. So I kind of felt like I should be wearing a face covering to make everyone else feel safe.
I think at the beginning I was quite anxious about actually getting the disease lots of people were, which is why the lockdowns worked quite well at the beginning here, at least in Austria, because people were sort of very, the first lockdown worked well and people did actually stay at home, but in the third lockdown, people, they noticed when they were checking mobile phone data connectivity, whatever, that people, in the first lockdown, 75% of people did actually stay at home, and now in the third lockdown, it was only about 25%.
I think so. Another thing was actually quite interesting at the beginning when things kicked off over here, and it was then lockdown and stuff, and also before that there was all the panic buying and all that crap. But
oh god, the panic buying! Can we forget about that?
It's actually something that was quite hard for me to deal with. I remember so before lockdown.
Yeah. Yeah.
So before the actual lockdown happened, there was a lot of panic buying here. Mm. And it happened from one day to the next. I knew that was happening in Germany already, but I was kind of I'd been talking to some of my friends in Munich, and they'd been telling me about it, and they were asking me how it was over here in the UK. And I was like, well, actually, no, that's not happening at all. And then from one day to the next, that changed. And suddenly there was no loo paper and there was no pasta. That was the two things that everyone bought was loo paper and pasta, and I couldn't get it anywhere. And there was this phase of we went to the shops and there was nothing. And there's it was very we'd have to go to five different shops in order to get enough food because the idea was okay. So it was difficult because it was kind of okay, we should probably buy food for the week so that we're not going out too much, because if we would, because before then we would live kind of, it was, I don't know why we were living that way, but I think it was because we were both working in the offices and stuff, and we didn't really have time to do a big shop, that we would kind of live day to day. So it was kind of on my way home, I'd grab something from the shops and then we'd eat that in the evening, or on, you know, my boyfriend's way home, he would grab something. And that was kind of how we worked things out. Because we were eating, we were eating at work before. So then we were okay, we should probably do a weekly shop, or try and get a proper big shop so that we don't have to go out for a while. So because we're supposed to be avoiding contact with other people, so it makes sense to do one big shop. But then it was kind of you couldn't get anything in any shop, so you'd have to go to five shops before you had enough things. And then by that point, you'd gone to five shops and you'd already you'd been in contact with too many people. So it was really quite hard to navigate. And I remember I was very, very stressed, and it was quite difficult because me and my partner, we react very differently to stressful situations, because I was then kind of I had a game plan always, we'd get ready to go out, and I'd be like, okay, this is the plan, this is what we're going to try and get, and if we can't get it there, then the second option is to pop to this shop, or there's the off license, and in a pinch we can probably get pasta from there or whatever. And I had a whole game plan. And I'm sort of very proactive in that respect. But in the shop, when it was very, very stressful, because it was people were going nuts, basically. And his reaction when he's very stressed is kind of to shut down and becomes very, very quiet and introspected, I think. Is that the word? Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to fix things, and then he kind of it didn't really mix well. So then it would be, okay, so I'll just send him home and say, okay, just go home, because you're not this isn't helping. And I'm gonna find all the food, and then just go to five different shops.
Was it mayhem with hundreds and hundreds of people,
Yeah.
Fighting to get stuff.
Yeah, it was really tough, and I felt really, it was really, what made me really sad actually was that in particularly the older people in the neighborhood would be kind of wandering aimlessly around the shop with an empty basket because they couldn't get anything, and that always made me feel really bad. And that's why they then had this whole thing where they were okay, now only senior citizens essential workers are allowed to shop early in the morning, and anyone else shouldn't really shop at that time, so that they get a chance to get
They did that here as well.
Well, and I remember one particular instance where we didn't really have much here, and we're let's go to the shop in the evening when it's maybe a bit quieter, because things were just mayhem all day. And then we arrived at the shop and there was nothing. Everything was nothing. I'm not even kidding. There was nothing to buy, nothing that made any sense. Everything was completely bare, and we were just wandering around. And then somewhere in the shop, someone started screaming at the top of their voice. And I think they just snapped and had I think probably just were having a panic attack. But they were screaming, high-pitched screaming. And I thought it was going to stop, but it didn't. And it went on for a couple of minutes. And then eventually I was just I can't do this anymore. We have to leave. We have to go right now. And I can't remember what we wound up eating in the end that day. We figured it out, but we just had to leave because I just couldn't take the stress of, first of all, there being absolutely nothing to buy, but also someone was clearly having an even worse day than us and was they'd completely lost it. And they were in the checkout area, I think. And it was just complete chaos. So that was actually really, really stressful at the beginning. And I did, I kind of had this feeling or this worry that it was just never going to stop, you know, that I was never going to be able to just do a normal shop again.
Mm.
And also I couldn't, like, I was like, oh, let's be clever. Let's order online. Forget it. That was everything was completely booked out for months and months and months. You couldn't get an online delivery. And it was, yeah, that did stress me out quite a lot. Not because it's the end of the world if you can't get pasta or toilet paper. That's not what it is. Like, of course we made it work and it was fine. It was something very new that I'd never experienced before, you know?
No, I mean, I'd never experienced that either. I mean, they got it under control pretty quickly in Austria, actually. But there was a couple of weeks when it was just. I mean, I just found it quite. I think what made me anxious was more
everyone else's reaction.
Well, yeah, but also like what made me anxious was this sort of, okay, this is what happens in an emergency. So everyone just sort of thinks for themselves and buys too much, more than they need of things. And then shops have to start saying, okay, you're only allowed to buy one packet of loo paper per person,
yeah,
or this and that many packets. They were like, they started to set limits and people, you know, and then there would be fights at the cash desk because someone wanted to buy more than they're allowed to buy of this or that product. And I think what made me most anxious actually at the time was just how much bad behavior, human behavior.
Yeah, that's
it.
Exactly
showed.
That's exactly it. Because, like I said, like at the end of the day, like if I hadn't been able to get any toilet paper, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. Or like no pasta. It's also fine. Like I don't need those things to survive, right?
So
It wasn't like I was scared for my survival. But what was really scary was just everyone. First of all, the energy, just like the nervous energy in the shop, like People with, you know, anxiety are very, very sensitive to other people's, you know,
energies.
Behavior and their energies. Like you really pick up on everything all the time. So when everyone is completely freaking out, you're like a sponge for all of this really, really bad energy.
Yeah.
And so that was.
And then
that,
you see someone in the supermarket with three bags of loo paper, and you see how everyone's hating this person.
Yeah, and then you feel like it's there, exactly. And I did also, because there are, you know, some people that have, like, you know, if there's a one person household and they have like 10 bags of loo paper, which is absolutely ridiculous, and then you have a household that has, like, you know, seven children, how the hell are they supposed to, you know, what are they supposed to do? And it was kind of the thing of like, I feel like everyone's freak out was just, because I also was very, like, because I didn't want to be that person. Whenever there was loo paper in a shop, which didn't happen that often, whenever there was loo paper, I would always just take one packet. Like, even if I could have taken two, I took one packet because I was like, I'm not going to be that person, because I know that where there's just two of us, and at the end of the day, like, you know, we'll figure something out. But there are other people who, you know, aren't necessarily able to just come to the shop whenever, you know, or have like a big household full of people, or someone who has like a newborn baby, and there were people buying up all the baby wipes, you know, who didn't need them because they weren't babies and didn't have babies, you know what I mean? And so those were things where I was like very particular to not to be that person, and to, like, you know, I would never take more than the limit for people. And I would, you know, even though, like, in theory, because of all the self-checkouts, you could take 10 packets of pasta if you wanted to, like, you probably wouldn't get caught. But no, I wouldn't. That's something that I didn't want to be that person. And so I didn't. And I think there were a lot of people who were like that, who did look out for others. But then there were also some people who were just like hoarding everything as though it was like.
And then they started selling it. They started selling it online. So I saw that someone was selling loo paper online for about, I think, 50 euros for a packet.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, and I don't understand the logic, because there was no reason to do it. It wasn't like there was a shortage of toilet paper. It wasn't like we weren't going to be allowed to go to the shops to buy stuff. And if everyone had just carried on as they had been before, or like started ordering, I mean, you know, there was like a, I think now they've kind of caught up, but there was a long time where it was kind of like, because so many more people were ordering online than before, they didn't have the resources to, like, you know, keep up with that, which is fine. Like, makes sense. Everyone ordering online would have been hard, but like if everyone had just carried on as before, everything would have been fine. But because for some reasons, I think it started in Australia, the toilet paper thing. Because of that, and I think it happened, there are like because there are areas of the world where you have things where like where things might be down for like a couple of weeks, like because of hurricane, big, you know, terrible weather, that kind of thing. And so stocking up on food that is, you know, imperishables and stuff like that makes perfect sense, you know. But that wasn't the case in most of the European countries, so there really was no need for it.
Yeah, but yeah, so for me, I mean, I was at the beginning, I was anxious about actually getting the illness and getting ill, really badly ill, or someone I know getting ill. But I think, yeah, like I said, what I found most disturbing and anxious making was actually to see that in any crisis, you just really see really terrible human behavior.
Yeah,
and yeah. There's always someone who's ready to exploit the situation, yeah. whether it's someone buying up, stockpiling loo the paper and then selling it for 50 euros, or hand sanitizers. And I'm not only talking about, of course, there's companies which profit from this, but also, but just like just basic normal quote in quotes people like the people who were selling loo paper for like 50 euros, or hand sanitizers for 100 euros. So people who are making a profit of the fear, and but then there's also people who just, you know, would probably kill you to get the food. So I thought, you know, if you know, anarchy did, you know, happen, then you'd really, you know what would you have to see how you'd survive. And it's, you know, didn't surprise me that in America one of the most things people stockpiled actually was weapons.
Yeah God.
But in Europe also, I think in Germany also lots of people started, I think 2020 was the year where most new guns were bought in Germany and Austria.
It's so like that, and that's the thing, is like that is so weird to me, because I don't understand where the logic was there at all. Like, it's kind of like, I don't know why they thought, what did they think was happening exactly?
When they bought guns.
Yeah, I mean, what do they think this was? A zombie apocalypse? Like, why?
Well, yeah, they thought it could be like an apocalyptic situation. Then eventually, everyone would just have to fend for themselves. And if you didn't have a gun, then you'd be fucked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thought crossed my mind.
I mean, not my thing.
I thought maybe I'd try to learn martial arts on YouTube more than buy a gun, but...
Yeah, true. I mean, here's the thing. My reaction to any kind of terrible thing would be to literally just like keep myself in my space and like not go out on a rampage with a gun. That would not be my
What if you had to, you know, verge out to sort of get, you know, pasta and loo paper eventually?
I would just wait for my boyfriend to die and eat him.
And then you start eating yourself.
Then start luring children into eat. I don't know. Like
yeah, I'm not sure if you can survive on a purely meat-based diet for that long. You'd probably get scurvy eventually.
Yeah, but if you eat the livers, that's where like vitamin C is stored, right? That's what. Here's the thing: carnivores, right? Mm. Like, because like you don't see tigers eating oranges, do you? Right? What they do is they get their vitamin C, I think, from the livers of the, you know, whatever cattle or whatever, like whatever herbivore they're eating. Because the herbivores, they eat like, you know, all this healthy stuff, and then I think the vitamins and stuff are stored in their innards, right? And that's why that's the go-to thing. You see a tiger like ripping an animal apart, it goes for its like
the know, organs first,
the offal. Yeah, and it eats those, and those are actually
it's anyway
disgusting. But yeah, I mean like there's nothing wrong with it per se. But yeah, that is how they get their vitamins, because everyone needs vitamin C, but that's how carnivores do it. However, I'm not sure how much vitamin C is, like, I'm not sure in what state his liver's in, so maybe that wouldn't be the best one.
Are you feeling stressed, anxious, tired, but wired and just out of it? Hi, it's Jim. I used to be just like you, but then I discovered Anxiety Calling. Lois and Hector are assholes. Oops. Did I say assholes? I meant siblings who discuss their personal experiences in their podcast, Anxiety Calling. Listen to Anxiety Calling for secondhand embarrassment, bad advice, disturbing anecdotes, and off-topic rambling from unsound minds. Ask your doctor or therapist before using Anxiety Calling, because these two sure as hell are not mental health professionals. Any advice or information given in this podcast is based on their personal experiences meant to raise awareness to help end stigma of mental illness.
Possible side effects may include boredom, chronic cringe, mental diarrhea, actual diarrhea, erectile dysfunction, and fatigue. Some listeners have reported never wanting to listen to anxiety calling again. But what's the best thing about anxiety calling? It's free! Start listening today. This message has been brought to you by Jib, the Disclaimer Dude.
If I had to venture out, I think I would be, like, I would just try to, like, be as inconspicuous as possible, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, just sort of, like, scurry around in the corners and, like...
Like a pigeon. Then,
yes, that would be, like, I think I would probably be that kind of, that would be my thing. I'm not, I don't see myself going around, like, drawing attention to myself and then, like, violently killing people with the weapons. I feel like it does just comes very unnaturally to me.
Mm. Yeah. So that was, like, the beginning of
yes, I think I would definitely say that that definitely did make me feel very, very anxious. And there were, like, moments, like, in the middle of the shop where I was just like, what do we do? We can stop. A couple of times.
I did think about that too. I mean, that will calm down eventually, actually, you know, quite quickly. And then that was sort of replaced with, I think the worst thing, much worse than that, was okay, the realization, okay, this is actually going to go on for an awful, this is going to go on for a while. And then sort of the, you know, then I think what made me most anxious was the prospect of, I mean, I lost my job basically, actually, at the beginning. Yeah. Well, I didn't lose it. They just stopped paying because they didn't have any shifts anymore, basically. So I didn't lose. I still have that job, actually, even though I don't get any money from them. So I had to find another job, which is, like, really difficult in the...
It was, yeah, finding a job in the pandemic is not...
The pandemic, like, was terrible.
Very bad, yeah.
I mean, I did all sorts of freelance stuff and then this and then that and ended up, yeah, basically working up in, or not ended up because it's a good job, but I started working in the testing, in that COVID testing facility. And...
actually, like, I remember we talked about this a couple of times. It was like, what we're gonna have to do, like, if it comes to it, is we're gonna have to become essential workers.
Yes. No, yeah, exactly, which is basically what I did in the end then.
Yeah. That was a really good course of action.
Yeah, but I mean, it took a long time to get that job as well, and I did apply for lots and lots of other things, and you just really felt that there's lots and lots of people who are very qualified who are looking for jobs, and there's just hardly any jobs. And before the pandemic, I remember Vienna was a sort of place I never really worried, because even if I wasn't in a job that I liked, if I was in a job that I didn't like that much, I could just do another job for a while. And there was always something going on. I could do basically anything. I worked in hotels and bars and offices.
Yeah.
You know, did freelance stuff, did sound design. There was always something going on. But suddenly there was nothing going. And that was, I think, the thing that gave me most anxiety was just the thought of financial destitution through the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that really worried me. In that, you know, I was up sometimes, I just couldn't sleep properly for weeks, because I was just thinking about how to sort of deal with this situation. And of course, there's millions of people all over the world who have that exact problem right now still.
I got really lucky in that respect, because I was, like, scheduled to leave my job right before lockdown, or, like, right after lockdown. Like, at the end of March, I was supposed to be leaving the job that I had, the copywriting job, because I wanted to try and, like, I wanted to try and act, you know, and I figured, well, I'll just, you know, work in service again and really try and pursue acting. But that was, like, the timing couldn't have been worse, obviously, because all of the theaters closed, all of the bars closed. I couldn't, like, get a job in service, and I was supposed to be leaving my job. So I did then turn around and beg my boss to take me back after all.
Mm.
And they did, like, which was really nice of them. So then I was put on furlough for a bit, and then I was made redundant, and yeah. But I did get, that was very lucky. But I remember that was, like, there was, like, I mean, I'm really glad I did that. I just, like... I just had to, you know, go and grovel. But I, you know, they liked me. They really liked me. So I wasn't like I'd made any, you know, I hadn't made any enemies or anything. So they were happy to take me back. But there was a couple of days where I was just like, what have I done? You know,
yeah.
I can't, there's no way I'm going to be doing any acting because everything is closed up and I lost my agent. because of the pandemic. All of the bars are closing. I can't get a job as a waitress. You know, it was really, really difficult. But interestingly enough, so what I found quite interesting was there was the panic because of everyone's behavior, the panic then about everything closing and like my job and everything. Mm. Then when we were actually put in lockdown, there was a phase where my partner commented that he said, like, somehow you seem to be doing a lot better than I would have thought you would do in lockdown. Like somehow you seem more calm than you were before any of this ever happened. And you actually seem to be thriving in this whole thing. And he wasn't entirely wrong about that, actually, because I think there were like two aspects to this. One thing is that everyone around me was kind of matching my normal energy of being really anxious about everything all the time. But another thing was that actually being like not having to go out was quite relaxing to me because, you know, it was just often the case that, you know, we would be doing stuff a lot. We'd be going out. My wages weren't that great. And so I always felt like I was broke basically because like a massive amount of my income went to our rent. And then the rest was kind of like drunk away or, you know, spent on stuff like, you know, going out to restaurants or clubs and stuff that I just didn't really, because it is just so expensive in London. And so at the end of every month, I was like going into my overdraft all the time. And that was quite stressful to me because like my income is like half as much as my partner's. My partner is, or was when we were both working, was earning like twice as much as me. And so for him, it wasn't such an issue to be, you know, spending that much money, but for me it was. And so that was something that was quite stressful to me. So then not being forced to like go out all the time and spend money was quite relaxing to me because I realized like, okay, actually I'm able to like save some money. And actually because of that, I was able to save up some money in a savings account for the first time in my entire life. I've never had savings. And this was the first time I was able to, because I literally couldn't do anything except, you know, buy food in a shop. So for one thing, that was quite a relief, but also just like, because of my social anxieties, not having to go out and mingle with people all the time was quite relaxing as well. Not having to go to the office was a huge one. Being able to work from home was a massive game changer for me and my anxiety. But also I think another part of it is sort of I have a tendency to get separation anxiety. And because like my partner like literally could not go anywhere, couldn't like just go to, because like he would work in Berlin sometimes, like every month he would go to Berlin for a bit. And it was fine, but it was like at the same time, I can get quite stressed about that because of, like I said, the separation anxiety is quite difficult to deal with. And so when we moved here, I think when we first moved here, I had very bad separation anxiety because I didn't know anyone here. And so if he wasn't here and I was by myself, then I really suffered. But because of then being in lockdown and him like not being able to leave, that kind of made me feel very relaxed because like, okay, now I don't have to worry about the next time he's going to be away. And that's actually because of this, because of how long we've like stayed in this one place, in this one bedroom flat together, it's actually really, really helped with that. And so like when he has been away since, because he's been away like twice, I've been mostly fine and it hasn't really been a big issue for me. And like a year ago, it would have been really hard. So in some ways, I actually did quite well in lockdown.
I never really got the full lockdown experience because the jobs I had, I mean, for a while during the lockdown, the trains were still running because they still had to run. And so it was weird. It was a very strange feeling. It was like when the train was going through particular areas, which were, I remember in Austria, a particular area had been completely locked down. So we had to drive through it. We weren't allowed to exit the platform because if we'd exited on the platform, we would have been within a quarantine zone. Mm-hmm. And so that would have changed everything. So it was a bit, it was very science fiction in a way, or surreal. It was very surreal. But I was actually, I had to work outside all the time. Mm. And then I had briefly experienced like the real lockdown feeling in the second, I don't even remember which lockdown it was, before I started working in the testing facility. And that did actually drive me nuts. Because I was alone in my flat, and you know, just had nothing to do, and I'm really bad at doing nothing. I'm really good at doing nothing.
Like,
I'm really bad at it. I just lose my mind. I don't even like going on holiday, actually.
Oh my god, you look like dad.
This is the kind of holiday where I just have to where I'm on the move constantly, like a fugitive.
Yeah, you're just like, that's another way in which you're just like dad, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because like, have you never noticed dad
hates not doing things.
Dad will have like 2 weeks off, and the first thing he decides to do is repaint the house.
Yeah.
That, or like when we were on holiday, you'd make us get up at stupid o'clock in the morning to go to some museum.
I mean, when I have a couple of days off, I sort of probably also fix the flat. Somehow change things that I wanted to change for a while.
I really like doing.
I can't do nothing. I wish I could. I mean, I should start doing that again. I tried as a habit to sort of do nothing, i.e., read a book on the sofa just after work, or paint. But you know, even that's not doing nothing, really.
No, okay. When I say doing nothing, I mean like nothing productive, mm. like I don't know, watching Teddy or something. So yeah, that was something actually was really hard for my partner, was because like, he like is very, you know, he's first of all, he's a social butterfly, and he likes, you know, socializing with people, and I don't. And he likes, you know, doing things and being able to, you know, experience new experiences, and every new experience terrifies me. So, so for me, it was actually like, I was super relaxed, and like he was sort of noticing that I was really, he expected me to, because of my anxiety disorder, to suffer a lot more, but actually I was doing quite well like mentally at the beginning, especially in the first lockdown, like when before the lockdown, when everyone was going crazy and everyone was scared, that was not good for me, because like it was you know, hard to cope with. But when we were actually in lockdown, I was doing quite well. And I was like, he said he hasn't really experienced me in such a good mood for the entire relationship.
Mm.
So, yeah. But that didn't stay. I mean, it hasn't always stayed that way. There were struggles as well, of like needing, because like I just need personal space as well, you know?
Mm.
And so there were some times where like I would need, basically the second he finishes work, right, he'll like want to come and hang out and talk, and like, you know, and when I'm done with work, I need like an hour to myself to like calm down, I guess.
Mm.
And so that was like an area of conflict where like even come into the, because like also I was working from the bedroom, like we have a one bedroom flat. Somehow it worked out that he gets the living room, which has a table, and I was working on the bed for the entire time we were both working in lockdown. And so he'd come into the bedroom then like at 6 o'clock when he was done, and I'd be like winding down from work, and then it would just be this thing of like, go away, I just need to be alone. And we had a phase where that was a bit difficult for a bit, but now then I wasn't working anymore because I lost my job, so now that isn't really a problem.
Yeah.
Now I'm working freelance, so I work in the sitting room now, by the way.
Good. Oh, you changed.
Yeah, we switched now because, well, the thing is,
because you need so many screens.
Yeah, I need so many screens, and so it makes sense, and I really need it, and it's like, it is very, and I'm, because I'm like working so much, and it is so much work that I really do need. I need the we've ordered a desk now, so like hopefully that will help. And we are moving soon, so when we move, we'll have an extra room to use as a office room. But yeah, he's now let me have the living room, which I really appreciate, because it would be almost impossible without it.
Mm.
Yeah, man.
I think the next phase is the one we're in now. Actually, is sort of this: will things change now that people are getting vaccinated? Are people getting vaccinated everywhere? Will it make a difference? You know, because it's not being distributed around the world properly. And so is it pointless to vaccinate here because the mutations that are going to come out of the countries which don't have access to vaccinations are going to be a problem for us too. When will, you know, everybody be vaccinated? I think this is sort of a new phase of the pandemic, or at least this is how I sort of feel it, you know.
I think it has
a different, a new kind of anxiety with it as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think the hardest thing is the just, I think because like, especially for people with anxiety, like at least this is how I experience it. The hardest thing is just not knowing stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like having no idea
about
what's going to happen. And I think that is so, I mean, it's hard for anyone. I think, you know, it's hard for a lot of people. But I think that's something that like, I have, you know, people with anxiety have this completely outside. If the pandemic never happened, they would have issues with kind of uncertainty, not knowing what's going to happen, that kind of thing. Surprises are always bad. And so, yeah, I think that is something that is really going to, that is, it is really hard. Just simply not knowing, like, you can't like plan anything. And I think what has been quite hard for me sometimes when I've had like, because I have had phases of being quite depressed as well. And over the last year, and I think one of the main things was kind of like, I don't really know what I'm doing. You know, it's sort of like, I don't know. There was often like the way I kind of keep myself alive, I guess, or keep myself going is that there's something that I'm working towards, you know? Yeah. And there were just phases where I was like, I'm not working towards anything because I don't know what's going to happen anymore. Like there's no certainty of anything anymore. There were phases in my life where I was like, okay, I'm at school and I know that I'm working towards finishing school. And then I was at university and I was working towards finishing university. And then I was at work and not doing the job that I wanted to do. And what am I sort of working towards now at this point, you know?
But I had a similar feeling, which did also crop up the last months, was, I mean, I'm studying art at the art university. And I mean, before the pandemic, it was sort of, I mean, lots of the stuff that we did there was sort of, I mean, some of it was special, let's say, or had, you know, it had its place somehow. But then I somehow, when things really started going to shit, I started having a weird feeling that I just didn't have the, I couldn't really work on anything anymore because it felt so trivial and frivolous in comparison to, you know, what was going on. And I mean, of course, it's important to have, you know, frivolous stuff and distracting stuff, especially during these kind of extreme situations. But still, I for myself, I found it very hard to work on anything connected to university or anything creative because it just felt so, yeah, I mean, it felt disconnected from the reality of the situation. And I mean, maybe that's why I wanted to go and work in the testing facility, because it felt somehow more useful or real. I don't know. But this is something which is still bothering me, though. It's still there. I still have this feeling that I don't really have the, I find it hard to carry on with my studies while everything is still so, so fragile and more basically fucked up in many ways.
Yeah, I felt, actually, that was the kind of, I know what you mean, because the job that I was doing wasn't what I wanted to do anyway, right? But I remember really thinking, like, I am so non-essential. This job is a joke. Mm. Like, how is this even a thing? How am I being paid more than, you know, the people who clean the tubes? Like, how is that fair when what I do is so stupid, really? Mm. Like,
you felt guilty in a way.
I did. I felt kind of like, and because then even when I was put on furlough and my pay was, you know, reduced, but at the same time it was enough to live off. And I was kind of, you know, even though like, yeah, I didn't really want to be furloughed, but at the same time I was like, I had to keep reminding myself, like, I'm one of the lucky ones in this situation. Like, I'm being paid literally to do nothing.
And you don't have to go out and endanger.
Yeah, I don't have to go out and risk my life every day, you know. Mm. I don't have to work like 24-hour shifts trying to save people while putting myself at risk. Like, I'm in this scenario, I'm one of the incredibly lucky people. And mm-hmm. like, yeah, I did end up losing the job, but even so, like, I had the privilege of being able to save up money while I was on furlough and while I was, you know, working from home. so that it wasn't a complete disaster when I lost my job and didn't work for 2 months, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I had that. I remember for me, I think, and this is an odd thing, but it does make sense in a way. So, I mean, I was, you know, anxious about many things. But so after the train job just stopped happening because there was no work, basically because the trains weren't running, and I was, you know, stuck at home, not earning any money, actually. And that was, you know, very anxious making. Before I started working in the testing facility, I was worried. I was very worried that I would be there and I would be super anxious because of, you know, you have to wear this hazmat suit and there are more people there and you do have, you know, positive cases of COVID. And so before I actually started, I thought, okay, fuck, was this a bad idea? Is this going to be, you know, is this going to trigger me, my anxiety like crazy? Mm-hmm. The funny thing was when I was there, I was completely calm. And because somehow, I feel safe anyway. Because we are, you know, we are protected and everything is disinfected and whatnot. But of course, there are more people there than most places because we test and vaccinate an awful lot of people every day. But somehow, I don't have any anxiety there. But when I have a day off, I'm just completely eaten up by terrible anxiety and close to panic, and I don't know exactly what it is.
Do you have any specific intrusive thoughts on your day off?
Well, you know, all of the intrusive thoughts that one has. But I'm not sure. I have to talk to other people who maybe work there who have an anxiety disorder. I'm not sure. But I think the reason I'm not anxious there is because it feels like I'm actually doing something to stop or to make it go away quicker, this, you know, horrible situation. And maybe that's why it feels like, it makes me less anxious because it feels like I'm productively doing something, even though it's really slow.
Yeah.
I have to ask other people if it's the same for them. But when I'm there, I'm just completely calm and I can work and I'm focused and everything works. And when I'm at home, like when I have 1 or 2 days off, I'm just, you know, worse than ever somehow. It's a bit weird.
It's weird. And I do really wonder what that is because like, I noticed that like when you get on a certain schedule, like you know, I know that you're working very long hours right now. Like you get up really early and you work like, you know, quite late. And so I'm wondering if like your body's just so used to kind of using up all your energy on working that it uses up all your nervous energy while you're working, right? So you'll feel calm because you're using up all your nervous energy and like, because you're not doing anything and you're like your body or your mind's kind of like, I should be at work right now doing stuff. Like that's why it all comes up. I don't know.
Mm.
Or maybe it's because you don't have time to like experience your anxiety while you're at work. So it decides to save it up for the days when you're not working.
Well, I have had jobs when I had time to experience anxiety. Actually, no, but maybe you're right. I think jobs that I had. So for example, when I was working on the railway, there were like short bursts of a lot of work. And then there'd be hours of just sitting and looking out of the window.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And then these thoughts would come, but it's true when I'm in the testing and vaccinating facility, you just rushed off your feet all day.
Yeah, I think.
And there's not 5 minutes of time to think about, you know, what's going on.
I think it's the downtime where it happens. Like I have that with most of my jobs. Like I remember, particularly like when I was like working in service, like I would arrive, let's say, on a Sunday. When I was working here in the pub, right? Sunday was Sunday roast day, which is the worst day of the week. Mm-hmm. So you'd arrive early and you knew that at 12, they would all come rushing in, right? And that like maybe hour or half hour before the first lunch rush was, and maybe the couple of hours of downtime before the dinner rush, those were the most anxious times at work because I was like so anxious anticipating the people that were going to come and be mean to me. But when I was actually working, I was like in the zone, man. Like I was like, you know, waiting tables, like it was nobody's business, you know. I was like really very, very efficient. I was always great with customers. You know, I mean, there's always going to be the ones that hate you, but like that's not really my fault. But in general, I'm very, very good at what I do. But the anticipation, or like on being on the my way, so going to work, like the trip to work, possibly the worst time, because that's when I'm most anxious, because I'm anticipating all of the stress, you know. But then when I'm actually working, I'm fine. And it's actually the same when I'm doing right now, like, because now I have some freelance work for a couple of weeks, and there are like when there are moments in the day where I'm like waiting to hear back from someone, but I don't have anything to do, and it's like a downtime of maybe half an hour to an hour, I'm at my wit's end.
Yeah.
Anxiety-wise, just terrified I'm not going to be able to deliver what the clients need. But then when it actually gets down to it, so far I've been able to deliver on everything that they needed. Didn't matter how much it was, like I can hyper-focus. Like I have this hyper-focus when I need it. But the downtime is the hardest time.
I think, you know, anxiety is a form of hyper-focus in itself.
Yeah, definitely.
If you're just, like you said, if you have time to think about yourself or your how you're feeling, what's happening in your body, what's happening in your mind, what's happening in your life, what's happening in existence, you know, that is actually a form of extreme focus, but a very unhealthy one, of course. And it'd be nice if one were more distracted, able to be distracted from oneself in those situations.
Yeah. But
I think that focus you can also apply to tasks if you have to. And I mean, yeah, I think probably most anxious people I know are very efficient and can be, or are extremely good at their jobs.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I just don't like having time off, because having time off just really triggers all of my, or sets, you know, sets everything going. I wake up, if I don't get up at 6 and then go straight to the office and then come home at 8 or 9 o'clock, I just, you know, I don't know why, but I just wake up at 7 or 8 and then I wake up already feeling anxious.
Yeah.
And it just continues through the whole day, and then I'm just happy to get back to work.
Yeah.
Somehow.
I know exactly what you mean. It's true. I feel what's been very interesting actually recently is, because we talked when we had our episode about ADHD, and I said I have an incredibly hard time focusing often, or like, you know, like especially like in the office setting and like working and stuff, and that sometimes like if I don't have a deadline, like it's hard for me to do. And what I've noticed actually now in the new setup that I have, where I'm working doing these freelance jobs, which are only for a couple of weeks, that I never knew that I could be so focused and work so much and deliver so much. And the reason is because, like, it's like I guess because there will be consequences, and I know there'll be consequences if I don't do my work. You know, I need to if I'm in this setup, and it's also good. I've really noticed that I literally do work all of the, I work for maybe 8-9 hours, very, very focused, you know. And I've never done that before in my life. So I'm kind of surprised. I don't know where this came from. Maybe it's because I had 2 months of being unemployed that now I have all this energy to do it. But
I think it could be that, because, I mean, before I started working again, I was very unfocused, easily distracted, wasn't finishing anything. And I think I was just, you know, really, part of me was really dying to get back into the fray, as it were.
Yeah, it's also interesting because I've never been out of work for that long. I started working at 15 and I haven't stopped, basically. And then there was that time when I lost my job in Munich, but then I also was maybe out of work for like 2 weeks or so before I then started working as a barista out of desperation to be back at work. And this was the first time, it was literally nothing I could do. I was trying to get a job, but there was nothing to get, you know. There was no job to be had, as it were. And so for 2 months, I did nothing.
Yeah.
It would be more than 2 months. It was actually 2.5, almost 3 months I had no work to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's maybe why. But it has been working really well, which I'm quite happy about. But I drive myself crazy. I do, because I, like, because of this need to, like, to over-deliver, you know what I mean? Like, do really well, because whenever I do work, I can't half ask anything, you know. It has to be good. Like, I can't do my job badly. I might not be the most efficient person always, but it has to be.
That's the end of part one of episode 23. Tune in next week for part two, and if you haven't already, give us a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, and Instagram.